name is Kate.
And I'm Carly, and you are listening to Culprits, Crafts, and Crimes. We are back.
I know, finally. I want to apologize real briefly. Like, that was like a hectic 2 weeks there. It was me losing my grandfather, like becoming single, like having all my friends leave, and Carly...
I went on a birthday trip.
See, I had all the sad stuff happen, and then Carly's like, okay... I gotta go, like, live this
22
great...
22 was an important year.
Every time I hear that, I always think of Taylor Swift, like, I'm feeling 22. Everybody does, though. Yes. I bet, like, half of these people just cringe hearing that. Anyway, we are back now, hopefully to our regular schedule, Tuesday talks and Friday updates.
Yes, so thanks for bearing with me this week as I did this Tuesday talk. And then, we'll be... pumping them out in the
future.
We're
back, baby. Like, we back, baby. Anyway.
Yes. Well, today's craft, we are actually making something pretty cool. It is December, and it is coming up towards the holidays. So we're going to be making some DIY snow globes.
I know. I'm so excited.
Yes. So I've bought a couple of, like, jars from the dollar store, like mason jars, and then a bunch of little figurines. I've got, like, a Mickey Mouse, some little dinosaurs. I found a Minion.
I was so excited about the dinosaurs. I'm literally going to make mine, like, be a Christmas tree and then, like, two dinosaurs fighting. Like, it's going to be great. I'm so excited about it. I will throw something out there. With a lot of these crafts, they have always been on the cheap side. A lot of the materials we have gotten for them have been from the dollar store. I think the most expensive thing...
Free from Walmart.
Like, the most I've ever spent was for Thanksgiving, we made, like, little hand turkeys. I think I spent a whole $13 on all the different colored felts, because they're each, like, 58 cents. But, so, yeah, not only are we doing this fun, you know, like, in a fun way, but also cheap, which is great, because we're college students who have no money.
100% no money. So, yeah, we're going to be flipping those mason jars upside down and gluing all the stuff to the lids and then adding water, some glitter, and making it a pretty little snow globe.
We will post pictures so you guys can see and be amazed.
And videos and watch as our dinosaurs live in snow.
I'm so excited about it. All right, but on to what you guys are obviously all here for. You're not here to talk about snow globes, but to added bonus. So quick disclaimer for this one. There's nothing too bad about it. Today's murderer, serial killer, a lot of people have known about and heard about but may not know the full story of. I honestly didn't. It was a serial killer that I've heard about, like, on TV shows like Criminal Minds, but I really didn't truly know the full story behind today's killer. Today, we are going to be talking about the son of Sam, a very famous serial killer. Like, I mean, he killed, like, 6 people, injured more, started a bunch of fires. Apparently, I learned that today. So yeah, let's get into it. I don't know how to say his last name. I want to be dead honest about that. I might just call him David or the son of Sam, because it's David, like...
Berkowitz?
Berkowitz. A name you're going to get bullied for? So yeah, he's either going to be called David or just the son of Sam, because it's just easier that way. There are a lot of surnames in this that are going to be very hard to pronounce, so just... bear with us and don't judge us too roughly. I'm trying.
We're gonna stick to first name basis
here. I'm trying. There's one victim that I tried to say her name and I couldn't say it right and I didn't want to dishonor her, so her last name might just be V. But anyway, okay. So David was, for his early life, I didn't read too much about it, but he was adopted by a Jewish American hardware store, like their retailers, David and Pearl Berkowitz, when he was only days old. So he had been given up pretty early by his birth mother and adopted into a family that seemed pretty loving. He was very close with his mother and had a very hard time dealing with her death, like her passing. But he did grow up troubled. A lot of people in his life described him as a loner and somebody who really kept to himself, didn't really have any close friends or any strong relationships besides the one with his mother, which he then eventually lost. But at age 18, he did enlist in the army. I know he did some work out in, like, South Korea that he was, praised for. And then in 1974, he got out of the army and then got a job as a letter sorter at the U.S. Postal Service. And honestly, when I read that, the first thing I thought of was in the Grinch movie. Like when you go into that back room and it's like all those cubbies that he's shooting letters into, just like instantly that's all I thought about. And that's definitely not how that went down. But I was like the first thing that I thought about.
That's what I always think of when I think of like that kind of job. And I was like, they're just tossing stuff. I loved it.
Hope this is the right person. Like with how many since moving into my new apartment, with how many letters that I've gotten for like the wrong building, I've had to deliver 3 different packages for neighbors that were in like separate buildings from me. I was like, hi, so 2 buildings down I got your package, like here's a Christmas gift that I'm sure you were looking for.
Definitely. And then to kind of piggyback off of that, I had read too also that when he was growing up, because he was kind of troubled and he was dealing with a lot of stuff, he kind of got into some like larceny and then pyrotechnics.
Yeah.
Just kind of
that love
digging
of fire
into,
started.
Yes. So it was all kinds of crazy. And looks like after he had been released from the military, he ended up going and tracking down his birth mom. So he ended up finding her, Betty Falco.
That's a cool name. Star Fox.
Yeah, it's really cool. Who ended up telling him all about his illegitimate birth and even told him that his original name was Richard David Falco.
Yeah.
So his adoptive parents had kind of rearranged his name. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had found out that, so his birth mom and father had separated just after he was born, but he found out that his birth father had just recently passed away, and
so this is all kinds of stressors.
All kinds of, like, brand new news, new relationships forming, but there's a lot going on, so naturally, he kind of got upset about everything, and then just dealing with processing with stuff. I mean, he was still young. He was, you know, in his, like, 1920s.
Yeah, he was young.
Yeah, so he ended up just kind of losing contact with her and started just continuing working into his job as the mail sorter and ended up getting an apartment in the downtown neighboring cities in New York City.
And he was building his life for himself. But I honestly think that conversation with his mother was, like, a big stressor. Like, that was a lot of information to learn about yourself that I don't know if he had, like, really truly known from the get-go if he was adopted or not. I don't know if his adopted parents were honest with him about growing up or if that was, like, new news that he found out. But obviously, like, hearing about how he came to be and how, like, his original parents' relationship was and losing his biological father, never even had that relationship with him, like, that's a lot of stress. Like,
imagine coming home, though. What if they told him once he got back and then he was just like, what? And
then
started taking off to find her.
Yeah, it seemed like that was a lot of news to take in, because only 2 short years later is when this whole story started. July 29th, 1976, David killed 2 teenage girls, Jody Valtinetti, I don't know, and Donna Loria were in the Bronx. They were sitting in a car in front of Donna's home when there was a shot through the car window. Well, he didn't kill 2 teenage girls. Jody did live, but she was injured, but Donna, unfortunately, did die. It's just so sad. Like, there's everyone, a lot of the people in this case were very young. Like, they were, we're older than some of them now. And, like, that's crazy to me. Like, it makes me sad.
And it just doesn't make any sense. There's no context behind any of these. There's no reason.
These weren't people that he knew. Like, he didn't start with friends or family or anything like that. Like, it seemed like he kind of just got up and was like, okay, this is what we're doing today.
Today's the new hobby.
So shortly after that, Carl De Niro, 20 years old, and Rosemary Keenan, 18. Carl was shot in the back of the head while he was in the car. He did live, but he required a metal plate to be placed in his skull, which, I mean, like, it's great that he lived, but man, what a big transition. Like, what a different life he's going to have, having a piece of metal that large in your brain. Or not so thankfully, how you look at it, a lot of David's victims, they didn't always die. He killed 6 people, but he did shoot a lot of people that ended up having life-altering injuries.
Yeah, it was almost like he would shoot
just randomly,
and
blindly.
Then maybe one of them would die, maybe the other one would just be injured, or maybe they'd both be... He just kind of...
It seemed like he never really stuck around, and it might have just been fear of someone hearing the gunshot, but I don't know if his goal was to kill and get out of there, or if he was just shooting to maim, because he never seemed to stay long enough to see whether or not they were going to live mm-hmm. or not. So it didn't seem like he was fully out there to kill, but he was out to hurt some people. He was out to kill, you know, he was out to just hurt people. And if he killed them, that kind of just what happened. November 27th, 1976, Donna DeMasi, who was 16, and Joanne Lamano, who was 18, they were sitting on Joanne's porch steps or, like, steps leading up to her house when someone stopped to ask for directions, you know, like a, hey, can you point me in the direction of... And while these girls were giving him directions, because they probably just assumed he was mm-hmm. lost, as anyone would, David pulled a gun out of his jacket pocket, and both the girls got up and turned to run into the house to get away. Joanne was shot in the lower spine, which left her paralyzed and wheelchair-bound for life, and Donna was shot through the base of the neck. Both lived. I know that Donna was obviously injured, but I don't think mm-hmm. that she had any lasting repercussions like Joanne did, which is honestly quite surprising because I feel like if you were shot in the base of the neck, the fact that you weren't paralyzed from the neck down is astounding.
It must have, like, just missed it.
I know there's been cases where it's, like, right there, like an inch or two to the left, and it would have been different. Joanne, unfortunately, was not as lucky when she was shot in the lower spine because she was left in a wheelchair, which is just horribly sad.
So moving on into the next year. So this is 1977 mm-hmm. January, and you kind of start to see a pattern.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of groups of two, which I don't know
like
if that's
couples, two friends, young girls,
mm-hmm.
or some of them have been couples, but the common denominator seems to be people grouped together, and it seems like a lot of these attacks and murders were being done while people were in cars.
Yeah, so this next one, that's exactly what happened. He spotted a couple in a parked car and ended up, just shot two to the head of the girl, and then I think she ended up dying and he ended up living.
Yeah, so 30-year-old John Dell and Christine Freed, 26, they had left a bar and they were sitting in their car, like getting ready to go home, when the window was shattered from a bullet that hit Christine in the head, instantly killing her. And poor John, I mean, he thankfully was left unharmed, but he just watched his, girlfriend get murdered and shot next to him. And then only a couple months later, on March 8th, 1977, Virginia, and this is the girl, I'm going to say her name, but I'm going to butcher it, and I'm
My
so sorry.
My guess is Voskrichian.
Yeah, Virginia Voskrichian. She was 19 years old. She was returning home. There was like a man kind of in the walkway. And so she sidestepped him just to get around him very politely. Just sidestepped him. And he ended up shooting her in the head. That's not funny. I just laugh because I'm uncomfortable and that makes me sad.
I know.
Like, walks all the time. Like, ever since everything happened, I've been taking so many walks to clear my head and think about life. And there's so many people that I've just casually kind of sideswiped or sidestepped around. Just to get out of their way to keep my walk.
Yeah,
not just shoulder check them and be like, hey, Buster, get out of my way. I'm walking here.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about life. And to think that someone could just pull out a gun and shoot me in the head and then I'd be dead and gone is honestly terrifying. Maybe I should stop taking those walks at night. But both of these women had been murdered in relatively like the same kind of area and with the same gun, a .44 caliber, police were able to link them together, and Deputy Timothy Downs was like in command of this new like investigation on these murders.
And then, so the next month, we've got another one, April.
Yeah, he did not wait. He did not wait.
It was like once a month kind of a thing.
Yeah,
like,
he did not wait that long.
Shot another couple and killed both of them.
Yeah.
Valentina and Alexander in their cars again. And this time, something a little unique happened. He ended up leaving a letter addressed to the NYPD's captain addressing, hey, it's me, but you don't know who I am.
Yeah. It was like
tough
a taunt.
Getting me.
It was a taunt to police, and a lot of people know this case because of that note and the notes that were left. News medias and journalists were also being sent notes from him to be like, I'm doing this, but nobody knows where I am. Nobody's gonna like catch me.
Yeah.
So it was a big taunt to police, like challenging them to like, hey, come find me.
And kind of during that process, he kind of created a name for himself because of the bullet he was using in the gun. He was becoming known as the .44 caliber killer. And up until that point, media had started kind of using that. Mm-hmm. But that letter that he left, the first one, he signed it saying, Son of Sam.
So he named himself something new. He probably did not like the name that was being given to him on the news, took that power and said, listen, that's not my name. You will address me as Son of Sam. We'll talk about why he ended up going into that, like, because that's like a whole story, and we do have more murders, unfortunately, to cover. But, I mean, it kind of made me laugh when I found out, like, part of the reason why he went by that. So, the news did pick up on that, though, and they did start calling him the Son of Sam, which is the famous name that he now is known by. It was, he wasn't trying to get caught sending those notes. Like, six or seven officers had handled the note, which, I mean, dumb. Like, why would you guys do that? But six or seven officers had handled the note, and even after all of their fingerprints had been removed, they had only found one, like, partial small fingerprint in the corner of the note, so he had been sure to, like, not leave his DNA or fingerprints on it to where he'd be easily tracked, because I think if he was in the military, he probably would have had fingerprints or something, right? So, anyway, that kind of changed it. That made it different, and everyone genuinely started to fear the Son of Sam. June 25th, 1977, Judy Palcido, 17, and Salvador Lupo, 20, were chatting in the car talking about the Son of Sam. That's what made this horrible and ironic. They were literally talking about the Son of Sam when shots were fired through their window. Sal had been shot in the wrist, which went through his, like, arm, I guess, or his wrist, or grazed it, and ended up hitting the side of Judy's neck. And the next shot ended up going into her head, but didn't penetrate her skull. So Judy definitely got the tougher end of the deal there. She didn't die, so she... I mean, I didn't want to be like, she didn't die, so it's not that bad, but, like... I mean,
that's traumatic.
She got hit in the neck and in the head, and she still, like, survived, and that's crazy. And then Salvador just got hit in the wrist. He did scare the Son of Sam, though. He did get up out of the car and run out to see if he could find out who did what they did and try and get, like, a witness eye report, but he wasn't able to catch him in time.
So, yeah, up until this point, no one has actually seen him, so no one has no witnesses.
Well, like, the victims who ended up living, like, the ones, like, the girls that were paralyzed and everything, like, they were able to give, like, an eye description, but it wasn't anything helpful. Like, it, you know, spur of the moment, everything happened so fast, and honestly, when there were victims that did live, there were conflicting kind of statements.
Like, if I gave you a picture of somebody and said, go find them, you'd be like, how in the world do I find this person?
Well, especially if you were shown a picture of a man for 12 seconds, and then a gun was pulled out on you, and then you were shot in the face, like, I'm sure if you were asked a couple days later, hey, what did that picture look like, you wouldn't really remember.
Yeah, but definitely.
So his spree continued for just a little while longer. The final attack happened on July 31st, 1977. Bobby Violante, I think, 20 years old, and Stacy Mokoski? How do you say that one, Carly?
Moskowitz.
I butchered that. It's Moskowitz. Oh my God. 20. They went to a movie together. They went on a little date night, and then at, like, 1:45 in the morning, they parked at a park, like, under a street lamp, and decided to have a stroll, a little nice romantic stroll, which maybe don't do. You know, if you know that there's a killer out there, maybe, like, don't do that. Yeah. But I get it. Romance. We've all been romance.
And a lot of time, you would think, like, hey, there's somebody else with me, so nothing's
gonna happen. And that's not true. Like, everybody needs to understand that's not true. I'm sorry. Ignore my dog if you can hear him. He is, like, big boy upset. Come here, bub. You want to come sit with us and do snow globes and, like, talk about the Son of Sam? Yeah, you do. Anyway, when they were done with their stroll, they decided to head back. Oh my gosh. Can you grab him, Carly? We're just going to pet him this entire time. They decided to head back to their car to canoodle. They were kissing, you know, they were on a date, ending quite well, when three shots were fired into the window. Bobby's eardrums exploded immediately. Yeah. Like, he must have been right up against the window. They exploded immediately, and Stacy collapsed in his arms. He had been blinded, so he didn't know what had happened, and all he had really felt was Stacy collapsing in his arms, while his eardrums were shattered and he had been blinded. Stacy unfortunately died, and Bobby was left permanently blind in one eye and partially blind in the other, but to where he really just couldn't see.
There's no vision left.
Thankfully, on this case, though, there were witnesses that were able to Like, and they're the reason the Son of Sam was caught. These witnesses were really literally able to get
it was everything. A 1 in a million chance, too. Like, he literally barely made it through. So someone had noticed that this guy had kind of been watching and was kind of just looking at, like, what's going on. Just kind of sitting there. What was he kind of like? A hippie dressed up?
They described him as a hippie, like a hippie man. They had noticed Tommy Zeno and Debbie Crescendo had noticed a strange man kind of watching the couple. And Tommy had, you know, they had heard about the Son of Sam on the news, so they had been like a little bit more vigilant, smart. Yeah. Like, and they had noticed that there was really one other car like parked with them at this park that had a parking ticket on it. And when they went to their vehicle and they were sitting in their vehicle, I'm assuming canoodling as well. Everybody's just canoodling that night. That's it. And I love that word.
The romantic part.
I love that word, by the way. I just think it's so, like, sweet. Like, instead of being like, oh, they were making out, just, they're canoodling up in there. Anyway, so they had heard the shots. And Debbie had reportedly, you know, been like, oh my god, what was that? And Tommy was the one with sense. I'm sorry, my dog is like kissing my face right now because I'm actually paying attention to him. Like, I'm just talking about murder and he's like, yes, love me. But Tommy had been the one to be like, I think that's the Son of Sam, get down. Like, you know, we need to be safe here. And it's not funny. Yeah. But they had, thankfully, they had been able to remember the car that they had saw and that parking ticket. The Son of Sam was caught because of a parking ticket.
Yeah.
Learn to park better. You can't catch me. Well, clearly a parking, like, officer did.
Yeah. So, because there were so few cars and in that area, it ended up that police had only given out maybe two.
Yeah, it was a very small amount.
Yeah, a parking ticket. So, they ended up just going through those. And on August 10th of 1977, David was arrested. And he was quoted as saying, like, as they're arresting him, he was just like, well, you got me.
Yeah, pretty much. He's like, okay, I sent all those letters saying you wouldn't do it, but literally, Son of Sam quote, well, you got me.
And after, like, a stupid mistake, too. Like, yeah, something smart.
Yeah, it wasn't, and that's how it goes, isn't it? Like, isn't that terrible? Like, the Son of Sam has gone down in history as, you know, one of those nefarious serial killers because of those letters that he sent and the taunts that he sent. And then he gets caught because of a parking ticket, and he's like, well, you got me. Okay, all that big talk, it's whatever now.
Yeah, and then things take a little weird turn.
When interviewed and questioned about why, you know, why had you done these things? What inspired you to do this?
What is your inspiration?
Yeah, right? He stated that he had been commanded to kill by his neighbor, his neighbor's dog, Harvey. Take that for a minute. He thought that his neighbor, Sam Carr, had a demon dog. Poor Harvey, his doggy name's being dragged through the mud, and he said that Harvey had been commanding him to go and kill these people.
Yeah, he was, like, coming over and giving him messages of things to do.
Yeah, and he said that Sam had been delivering these messages through his dog because he believed his neighbor Sam was a demon, and the reason he had named himself the Son of Sam, going back to earlier, is because he saw himself as Sam's, like, Reaper, pretty much, where Sam and Harvey would, Sam would deliver messages to Harvey the dog, and then Harvey would deliver them to David, and David thought of these murders as his way of carrying out Sam's, like, wishes. So he named himself the Son of Sam because he saw Sam as an almighty demon. Poor Sam's just, like, chilling in his apartment, like, what? What happened? Like, my dog Harvey barks sometimes, but what? But later, like, he did get, like, an evaluation. Like, everyone was like, okay, clearly he's just crazy. But he was...
Nope, you're good.
Yeah, no, he...
Go ahead to trial.
Yeah, they said he was competent enough for trial. And later on, when he was interviewed, he, you know, did say to, like, what, like, a therapist, like, oh, yeah, no, that was all a hoax. Just a silly hoax. It was actually a cult. Not a demon dog.
I'm a part of a cult.
Yeah, he's like, not a demon dog. Are you, who would believe that? I'm a part of a cult that's run by Sam's sons.
Yeah.
And I want to know about this obsession with his neighbor. Like, I want to know if his neighbor was like, hey, man, how's it going? And then he's like
his neighbor
yes.
weird? Or
yeah, like, just... like, yes, my demon king. I shall go do those awful things for you.
I couldn't find any, like, interviews or anything with that neighbor. So I don't think there was much.
Honestly, I don't even know if the neighbor was really even real at this point.
But
in 1978, like a year after he was arrested, he did plead guilty to six murders. on like what 1,500 fires. Yeah, he start like that was ghosted over. That was very ghosted over, and I apologize. But like, how do you start that many fires? Like, were they little like trash fires or something?
Yeah, it started off like middle school, I think. He just kind of, I think they had said that he was just really intelligent and kind of got bored with school, so he would just like skip school and just go hang out with friends or something, and just like start many fires all over New York City.
Yeah, so he, 1,500 fires, 6 murders, and he received 25 life sentences for the murders, for each murder?
25 years, yeah, for each life that he had killed.
So, and all to be served, like, right after another, so he's meant to stay in prison. Great. When he was handed the verdict of, like, hey, so this is your sentencing, he tried to jump out of a 7-story window. Like, the judge told him, this is what's gonna happen, you're basically gonna be in prison for the rest of your life.
He's like, actually, no, let me go.
Yeah, he's like, you thought, and then went to go try to jump out the window. I mean, like, I get it, but also, like, come on, man. You are chained to a table, there's 3 guys here with guns, like, preventing you from doing that. I just found that kind of funny, that he was such a big talk, like, oh, try and catch me, like, you're never gonna catch me. Gets caught, and he's like, well, you caught me, get sentenced, and he's like, time to jump out the window! Like, it just seems like, I don't know.
I think he just liked the chase.
He did like the chase, he liked the big, big dramaticness of it all. It sounds like a drama queen, but, so he did end up doing like a lot of interviews and books and everything after this. So interesting.
And he got paid.
Yeah, he got paid for it. He was profiting off of that. So thankfully, there were Son of Sam laws put in place preventing convicted criminals from financially profiting from books, movies, shows, or anything related to their crime. So
now, most states now have that law in place. So,
like, when we watch, like, those Ted Bundy documentaries that everybody got so insane for, myself included, like, Ted Bundy he's gone, but, like, Ted Bundy wouldn't have gotten any money for that, looking up and watching stuff on the Son of Sam wouldn't have gotten anything from that, which is good, because they shouldn't be able to profit off of that.
No. It's not a good thing to be rewarding.
Proud of, or rewarded, like, I mean, seriously, I want to make, like, a bad joke, be like, hey, you're down on your luck. Murder somebody and then talk about it, and then college is paid for. Like, seriously, that's just terrible. So thankfully, that law was passed in a lot of states, and that's like how it is now, where convicted criminals aren't able to profit off of their misdeeds, what they did.
So thankfully, he's now tucked away. But it looks like he was actually like,
wasn't he trying to be paroled?
Yeah, like multiple times. And it was constantly denied.
They're like, probably not, guy.
It's like, if you were, like, making up all kinds of stories about you being in a cult, and then you being, you know, told to do things by a demon dog. And weird stories like that, you're not gonna get out anytime soon.
I know, like, honestly, it sounds messed up, but, like, parole officers are more likely to believe, like, hey, I killed my ex-girlfriend in a fit of rage because she, like, cheated on me, but I don't feel that way anymore. I have a lot of regret and remorse. I want to be a different person. Okay, cool. And then the Son of Sam's like, nah, I killed because of a demon dog. That was just a joke. Psych, I killed because of a cult. But I'm ready to be fine now. They're gonna be like, no, man, like,
you don't deserve
you're gonna stay right here and hang out here for the rest of your life.
Keep a good eye on you.
Like, and don't be jumping out of any 7-story windows every time we tell you no. Like,
So he's out there doing his time in his correctional facility in Wallkill, New York.
Yeah, he's still in New York.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel kind of bad. Like, I knew about the Son of Sam. Like, I remember I watched, like, a really intense Criminal Minds, like, 2-part episodes where they mentioned, like, the Son of Sam, because they were, like, in New York and all these murders were happening. And I was like, wow, he must have done, like, a crazy amount of stuff. And he did. He injured a lot of people. He murdered 6 people. But I was honestly, like, I don't want to say I was a little underwhelmed by what he had done. But, like, it seemed like the hype around him was so large. Like, he is a terrible person. He did a lot of damage and caused a lot of harm. But I thought that he went on, like, a giant mass killing spree that lasted, years and years and years. It lasted, what, a year?
Like, just, like, a year.
I think it was mostly the hype that the media got from letters being sent to the police and the police being taunted, because I don't really think that had been done before, right? Like, not to that extent. Not, like, he really Like, he named himself. Like, usually people kind of
yeah,
just...
He renamed himself.
Usually the media will give serial killers, like, a name, and that's just kind of how, what they're stuck with. Mm-hmm. But he said, no ma'am, renamed himself, gave himself a new image, scared the public, I don't know if he scared the police, but he definitely scared the public. And, I mean, he taunted the police, so maybe that's why this case was so influential and so life-changing, because he really did, like, I mean, he just threw it out there, man. Like, come and try and catch me, and they did. Well, you got me.
Yeah. And, like, the reason I kind of had even looked into this case was I had always heard of the loss on the stamp, but I didn't know what on earth that was. Mm-hmm. But, so maybe that was also one of the reasons why it became so well-known, is because...
He was profiting off of
that. Maybe all of these other, like, criminals were being able to get money.
I mean, yeah, he did change things. I mean, in a good way.
In that case, yeah.
In a good way. Like, I couldn't imagine, like we were talking about in one of our first episodes, it was our first episode, the Green River Killer, how many documentaries and shows have been made off of him. Like, he's still alive, and he was almost let out. Can you imagine? He got let out of prison. They're like, hi, so that law was never in place. You're a multimillionaire now. And he's like, cool, great, thanks. Like,
yeah, imagine that. Yeah, it was never a thing. And so they just racked up this huge bank account. Right. It's like your 18th birthday when you finally get to break into that savings.
Right. Oh my god. I'm looking at my dinosaurs and I'm so excited. I'm so happy. I've decorated my house this is my first apartment by myself. Like, I had lived with a roommate last year, and she and I had just moved into the apartment right before Christmas. Like, it was 14 days before Christmas, and we didn't even have our lives together, so there was no, we put up a little 2-inch tree, and that was it. Carly and I are sitting in my apartment right now. It's all decked out. It has a huge Christmas tree that I put up all by myself. I'm so proud of it. I know. I'm a strong, independent lady. And then my friend Taylor came over and put up my lights because he's 6 foot. And he could just stand on his tippy toes and put them up there for me. Thank you, Taylor.
We've got lights all over the place.
There's lights all over. Christmas tree. I'm going to have a cool little snow globe. I'm so excited. I hope you guys have a safe, happy holiday. You're going to have us... For what, 2 more times before Christmas? Two more times? And then 1 more time after Christmas?
Yeah.
My calendar's off. Don't look at that.
I forgot
to put Christmas Day on there. As you can see, it says 24, then 26. I just skipped over Christmas. Christmas isn't real.
I was like, wait a minute.
Christmas isn't real in this apartment. Anyway, so that's the story of my Christmas spirit. But that's the story.
Thanks for tuning in.
That's the story of the Son of Sam. I feel bad. Carly and I go on these tangents where we're just like, hey guys, want to just talk about nothing that you want to hear about for 2 or 3 minutes?
Yeah, well, normally I come over to record the podcast, and we usually end up talking for at least an hour before.
Yeah, literally it's Well, it's because we work together, but now that Washington State has gone back into phase one, I do not see Carly. We are in passing. We are on different shifts entirely. I've been going through withdrawals. She's been going through withdrawals.
I literally haven't worked in almost 2 weeks because I took off the whole week last week for my birthday, and then I haven't worked yet this week.
See, and then I've been dealing with just, so much life. My grandfather, my ex-boyfriend, my friends. I've just been dealing with so much life. So Carly and I were oh my God, we actually haven't seen each other. We haven't talked crime. We haven't done any crafting. We're like, oh, what are we doing? We needed a good break, and talking with you guys has always been that. So, yeah. You guys are a really good help to us. And honestly, hearing from you guys, the support we get from the Tuesday talks, the support we've gotten from just the podcast, I've been looking at the numbers again. And I mean, we stay pretty steady right now, but considering that Carly and I really just kind of did this, and this is how we would be anyway, just talking, we talk about life and everything. And then we just start talking about oh, did you hear about this case? Or oh, did you hear about this crime? And being able to do it with you guys and share it and know that other people want to hear about shenanigans and our quirky little characters.
Yeah, I was like, you either like it because you like crime or you just like us.
Which, I mean, if you like both, that's cool.
We like that too.
Yeah. So we want to just thank you guys for being so patient and so supportive of us. It's really, really, it's really helpful, especially during these trying times. It's really nice knowing that we have people out there that care about us and are looking out for us and enjoy hearing all these stories. So we do this for you. We do this for us. us. It's been really fun. I'm excited to show you guys my picture of my snow globes. If you are a new listener or a listener who doesn't follow us on social media, you definitely should. Or yes. How are you going to see a dinosaur snow globe, okay?
Exactly. And you can't miss out on this.
So Instagram and Facebook, Culprits, Crafts, and Crimes. You'll find us really easily. We're like one of the first things that like pop up because like our name is so unique.
That's super cool.
Yeah. So thank you guys again for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Check out those social media platforms because we post every Tuesday for a Tuesday talk.
And sometimes I throw in memes on our Facebook page.
It's true. They're kind of funny. Like I've looked at a couple of them. I'm like, okay. Like it's true. Like, so yeah, check out those social medias. Be sure to link up with us. We'd love to hear from you guys.
And if you guys end up deciding to make anything that we talk about, definitely share that too. Oh, we want to see that. We want to see your creations.
I know. We're trying to be better about like actually showing the crafts we do instead of just like giving you bare minimum details and then
talk
just
about
like,
it.
Yeah, for like 30 seconds. But yeah, definitely. We also would love craft ideas. We got a lot of recommendations for stories to look into, which are awesome. We usually do like little craft giveaways when people offer us a really good suggestion and it's one that we hadn't thought of or really like we're like, oh hey, that's a great idea. So look out for that too, because if you do offer like a good suggestion, which a lot of you have, we'd love to be able to offer you some of the crafts that we've done. They're not like top-notch stuff, but you know how like when a kindergartner holds you, like gives you like a hand painting and you're like, oh my god, that's so great. That's pretty much what it is.
Yes. Shout out to our friend Taylor as well, because he ended up I was kind of looking back over, he did request this. So,
oh, Taylor.
Shout out to Taylor.
I'm going to like message him right now and be like, homie, go check out the podcast. You're mentioned quite fondly.
Like, yes. So, yep, we keep records of those and we kind of go through those when we're like, what should we talk about this week?
Yeah, because sometimes we're like, oh my God, we have to record like tomorrow. What are we doing? Because, like, I mean, we're both in finals week right now. So wish us luck, you guys.
Yes.
All right, but please. That's been like 10 minutes of us just like shooting the bull with you homies. It's been a while. We had to do it, but we're done now. We gave you guys all the case information. We'd love to hear from you. So please. We'll see you guys next week.
Yes. And as always,
stay safe out there.